This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.
Welcome to this BizNews briefing. It is Tuesday, the 11th of February. And in our lead story, the Democratic Alliance has filed papers in the Western Cape High Court to have the Expropriation Act declared unconstitutional and nullified in terms of every aspect of the Act. Earlier today, I caught up with DA Federal Chair Helen Ziller.
We think we have a strong case. We've gone on the strongest legal argument, which is not perhaps our strongest objection to the bill or the Act, but we are obviously taking the route that gives us the best prospect of success without going into too many complexities.
As I understand it, you have been opposed to this bill as the Democratic Alliance since 2018. Is that factually correct?
Yes, that is factually correct. And in fact, you must remember the history of this Act. It started with a resolution at the ANC's elective conference in 2017. Now, that was a resolution to introduce expropriation without compensation into the law and specifically into the General Expropriation Act that the ANC wanted. And it came straight out of the RET faction of the ANC. And we have been strongly opposed to it ever since, and our opposition continues to this day.
Helen, what does this mean for the GNU? Because this is a huge, I suppose, coming together moment of two sides of the equation. Can this break the GNU, in other words?
Well, I don't see why it should. I mean, we've got a different position on this Act from the ANC. And we say we're acting in South Africa's interests because our joint objective is economic growth and jobs. Everyone agrees that that is South Africa's number one priority. And given that, property uncertainty and broadening the right for the state to expropriate your land without compensation is massively detrimental to investment, growth, and jobs. So we make that argument very coherently. We think history all around the world has proved our point, and we believe we're acting in the very best interests of all South Africans. We're fully in favor of land restitution, land reform, which is happening under the other three acts. We're absolutely opposed to the ANC doing what they're trying to do in the Expropriation Act, and we believe that our position is in the best interest of South Africa. The ANC is welcome to fight with us and to disagree with us. But our job is not to make up the numbers for the ANC and the Government of National Unity. Our job is to ensure that we fight for all the people in South Africa in that Government of National Unity on the basis of the mandate given to us by the voters that put us there and put us in a position to hold the balance of power in the GNU.
Trump's position on South Africa and whether he is taking this out of context. It's hurting us. It's going to hurt us in terms of international relations. Potentially even the AGOA Act may come under extreme pressure and we may lose AGOA completely. But do you think that his emotive response on this is justified at this stage?
Well, if we're going to pass acts like this, we mustn't be surprised. That's the point. We know about Trump. We know how he responds to things. But I don't think it was the Expropriation Act largely that triggered him. I think he just had a long meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu. And what he's really fundamentally opposed to is South Africa siding with all America's enemies in the world to undercut America's interests. And what Trump is basically saying is, if you choose to do that, we're not going to choose to give you any assistance, either in aid or trade. Trump was wrong to say that land is currently being expropriated hand over fist. It's not. But this act opens the door to it happening in future. He just said it's happening now.
So this is just this is actually just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what the real problem is between South Africa and the U.S.
I mean, Trump's had enough of, and the U.S., frankly, has had enough, because this is a bipartisan thing in the U.S., both the Republicans and the Democrats, many of them, have had enough of South Africa acting as a proxy for Iran in the International Court of Justice. So that is one thing. Then there is huge anger in Washington about South African soldiers siding with Tshisekedi in the Democratic Republic of Congo against Paul Kagame, who is a very strong American ally, in Rwanda. And the United States doesn't like that. The United States doesn't like what we're doing with BRICS. What we're doing is building that up into a geopolitical anti-Western force. And, you know, it's ironic because the moment we celebrate most in our history was the moment that we became a constitutional democracy with everyone having the right to vote and checks and balances in the Constitution. And those are all Western values. And now we are making common cause with everyone who wants to destroy the system of government that we hopefully still prize. So the point is, they're not going to be able to get away with it. And so the cause is not Donald Trump, although he got it wrong on wholesale land expropriation. The cause is what South Africa is doing with all the countries that oppose the interests of America and the West, the whole of the West, by the way, and they've had enough of it.
You can catch that full interview with DA Federal Chair Helen Ziller on biznews.tv, and that's on our YouTube platform. Earlier today, Alec Hogg spoke to Kali Creel, the CEO of AfriForum, and we stay with the theme of the Expropriation Act.
So in terms of public opinion, we tried to say that property rights is something that's of importance. We've seen what happened in Zimbabwe. We've seen what happens in Venezuela. But then, of course, that is ignored. You then write to the president, as we did in April last year, saying this is unconstitutional. It's harmful to the country. We're going to lose investments. And then saying, if you not going to adhere to this, we'll have to go to the court. We are in the process now, but that also did not work. One of the only methods left is, of course, international pressure. But the interesting thing is we are being accused now of that we are to blame. That's an old strategy. The president as well as ANC leaders don't want to take full responsibility for the negative consequences of their own behavior. And the easy thing is to now and identify some kind of a scapegoat. This time it's not Jan van Riebeeck's fault. This time it is AfriForum's fault. But of course, we did not even engage with the U.S. again at all with regard to the new Expropriation Act. That was still something that was in the process for us. But the fact is, we believe this executive order signed by President Trump creates the platform to put pressure on the ANC to make sure that we find a solution.
I spoke with Rob Hersoff, a capitalist activist and very well-known and very outspoken person. And he said he sees absolutely no chance in the ANC backing down. Their history, their national democratic revolution obsessions means that they are going to take this to the brink. And he reckons we could see, we will see a 1985 repeat, where after the Rubicon speech, the international community and particularly the Americans withdrew all support from South Africa, including they refused to roll over any South African loans, and that collapsed the economy. Interest rates 25%, thousands of businesses went bust, hundreds of thousands of people were retrenched and made unemployed. Is that a scenario that you would take seriously?
Yes, that's unfortunately so. I don't want to scare people off. The fact is, we still have an ability to do what we can. Nothing in life is inevitable. Maybe one's chances are slim, but we believe that this action by President Trump is the best chance we have to avert actually what the possibility is that Rob mentioned to you. And it might sound like a paradox. How can a threat of action stop action? But that is how it works. A threat like this can maybe get them to rethink. If they don't, at least we can say we did everything we can. I can tell that to my children and my grandchildren. But even if that happens, because we have an attitude to say, we are not going to put ourselves at the mercy of President Ramaphosa or the ANC. We are going to do what we can to survive. It won't be easy. It will be harsh. But in the past, there has been terrible situations that had to be overcome. So we'll be ready for the challenge. But I must tell you, we must not stop holding the ANC and President Ramaphosa accountable. And we should not fall for this blame culture. If we're simply going to continue blaming someone else, if it's not AfriForum, it's Elon Musk or whoever, or Trump, that's not going to solve it. It's time for introspection. Recognize what the problem is and solve that. That's the only chance we have.
We're still with the Expropriation Act. And yesterday, Alex spoke to Dr. Franz Cronier, who is an independent political analyst, and he very clearly takes us through the difference between the old Expropriation Act and the new Expropriation Act. Let's take a listen.
The new expropriation legislation will allow the state to seize any property, fixed or movable, for less than its market value. When you do that, you gravely weaken property. The previous act, if you were expropriated, compensated on the grounds of market value and for financial loss. So if you were one of my clients and came to me and said, we're going to invest in South Africa, what happens if we're expropriated? I'd say it's very easy. You'd get an accountant and you'd get a valuer, and they would tell you what the value was of your investment, and the court would agree to that, you'd be compensated. Then property rights are secure because market value is an objective measure to judge compensation gains. The new act dilutes market value considerably and adds other subjective factors, such as the national interest, which could mean absolutely anything, to the calculation of compensation payable. So if a firm came into South Africa today and did its due diligence and said, what about expropriation? Someone in my position couldn't possibly tell what compensation they might receive if they were expropriated. So it's again maddening that the discussion that goes on about the Expropriation Act is centered chiefly on the question of land and chiefly on the question of law compensation, which are two arguments the ANC can relatively easily win on old sort of historical liberation grounds. And that the core problem, the heart of the Expropriation Act, is hardly understood across the country's economy. The Expropriation Act is in practice going to have the consequence that South Africa will never attract the fixed green fields kind of investment, that it needs to raise the rate of fixed capital formation to GDP. That's a good measure of the attractiveness of the country. And in a country like South Africa, fixed investment to GDP should sit at about 25%, 30% better. In practice today, it's sitting at 15%. And the press can argue, and sociology professors, national interests, but in the real world, where people really invest with real money and large amounts of it, the subjective nature, the calculation behind compensation in this act means that we will not raise the fixed investment number to 25%. Therefore, we will not raise the rate of economic from the current 1-2% to 4-5%. Therefore, we will not. It's not up for debate. We will not increase the rate of job creation to a point where we can erode the massive official rate of unemployment above 30%. The global average this year is 5%. If we do not do that, we will later radicalize Africa, and the risks of fragmentation, like, they're all coming to play. And I would urge slightly to think that when the most powerful man in the world and the richest man in the world, both of them, on the same day, take 10 minutes out of their very busy agendas to say to South Africa, in practice, on property rights and on the question of taxing capital on arrival in the country through BE, you will not be successful. It might be a good thing to hear them out.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
35 years ago, anti-apartheid activist Anton Lubowski was assassinated outside his home in Windhoek, Namibia. His killers have never been brought to book, but his wife Gabrielle continues to fight for justice. Chris Steyn brings us this riveting interview with Gabrielle.
35 years ago, anti-apartheid activist advocate Anton Lubowski was assassinated outside his home in Windhoek. His killers have still not been brought to book, but his widow Gabrielle is still fighting for justice, and she is with us today. Welcome, Gabrielle.
Thank you, Chris, for having me on your show.
You're welcome. You've been haunted for decades by this, particularly by events in the days leading up to Anton's killing and to events on that day. Please take us through those events.
Yes, it's not so easy to know where to start. So, I think I must just give a little bit of an introduction. Why did we actually get involved in the liberation struggle? So when we returned from our studies to Namibia, Anton was doing his apprenticeship at a law firm, and he came across young black men who were in prison, not because they were criminals, but because they didn't have the correct papers. So they had studied overseas. They were doctors, lawyers, accountants, and they were sitting in prison. So he said to himself, something is off here. And he started investigating, and he stumbled upon many atrocities that were happening in the country, and that South Africa was actually illegal in Namibia, and a resolution had been passed that Namibia would be led to independence, Resolution 435. And as a lawyer, he took a decision that he was going to make a difference and contribute to Namibia's independence. He was given an opportunity to meet with the exiled SWAPO president on one of our December overseas holidays, and he absolutely fell in love with the man. He said he loved his vision for a new Namibia, and in 1984, he decided to join SWAPO publicly and said they are the only ones that can bring us the freedom. So that is our background. That's why Anton got, but we had no idea what it would unleash. And from 84 to 80, beginning of 89, we went through absolute hell. We were ostracized. We were cut off from the community. We lost our jobs. We didn't have enough income. We were abused, media attacks, constant police surveillance, Anton's detention. So it was terrible. Now, what Anton's role, the very important role that he played is, first of all, he was the link between the inside and the outside SWAPO, because he was traveling all the time to tell the international community about the atrocities that were committed against Namibian citizens. So that was his very important role. Then the atrocities that were committed up to that point, they were wrapped in secrecy. So he uncovered them and he spoke about them. It was the first time that these atrocities inside the countries were actually exposed. And then the third thing that he did is that he took upon himself the organization to have the exiled leaders and other members come back into the country by organizing the offices, the houses, the furnishing for the houses, so that these people wouldn't be stranded on the street. So he did those three very important things. Yet, after his murder, it was as if he never existed.
That full interview is available on biznews.tv and well worth a listen. Turning our attention to the markets, we look now at the ramifications that President Trump's decision to suspend aid to South Africa is having directly on the markets. Our colleagues at Bloomberg have more.
If we flash back to a week ago, when we did first get a little bit of direction or at least verbal targeting from the president of the U.S. to South Africa, we saw the Rand plunge almost 2%. And we saw a lot of the discussion around mining in Daba, which is where I was at, focusing in on the future of bilateral relations between South Africa and the U.S. And as you mentioned, when we got this news on Monday, yesterday, a bit more muted, where I was just looking at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange closed almost to a record high. We saw a muted response from the Rand and also bonds. And when we talk to a lot of business leaders here in the country, the focus still is on the fundamentals of this economy and some of the improvements that we heard just about a week ago from President Ramaphosa of South Africa. But still, there is concern about what the future of this relationship looks like. You mentioned PEPFAR there. We have heard President Trump really targeting or being directional, I guess, when it comes to his frustration at this new expropriation law in South Africa. There's also his concerns around South Africa taking Israel to the ICJ. So the concern from business leaders is that potentially this ramps up and this escalates. But still, this is an important relationship for both countries. We should say South Africa is the U.S.'s biggest, most important trading partner on the African continent, biggest trading partner when we look there. And when we look to the U.S., it's very important for South Africa, second biggest trading partner, second to China. So it is important, but a lot of this relationship in the past has been focused on aid. You mentioned PEPFAR there. And so really the focus is going to be on what does this look like going forward and how do we cool the temperature, as some people told us.
Yeah, Jenna, it's going to be interesting to see how this is going to translate into people's perception of the economy, because the theme for the last couple of months, as we've spoken about a lot on this show, is sentiment is turning more positive about the South African economy. There's reduced load shedding, which obviously has been a massive headwind to the economy, but that headwind seems to be somewhat of a less of an issue. You talk about the prospects for central bank easing and what that means also for growth. How how do you think the actions by the U.S. administration are going to impact investors' sentiment towards the South African economy?
Well, you know, in my discussions with many people over the past 2 days, they have said that this current spat that we're seeing is a bit, one person described it as manufactured, right? Because the way that President Trump is describing his opposition to this law here is not exactly what it is. And so many people are saying that hopefully investors will see that at the base of this, these are two countries that do need each other. When you look at trade, when you look at aid, you mentioned PEPFAR there. And so hopefully they will be able to move past this. Not only that, South Africa is hosting the G20, the first African nation to host the G20. The expectation is that the U.S. was going to be here. We heard last week that Secretary of State Marco Rubio said he does not plan to come later this week when we do have the foreign ministers meeting. President Trump is expected to come later this year. But again, it is a very important relationship for both sides, both countries. And so investors are really focused then on the fundamentals here, right? If we are seeing an improved economy, if we are seeing energy and other, you know, other parts of this economy improving, is there really a disagreement here? And do these two countries potentially will just move past a lot of the disputes that they have now and focus in on what's actually important for both sides? But we'll have to see. It'll be very interesting.
Elon Musk continues to dominate on international headlines, and an Elon Musk group has made a $97.4 billion bid for control of OpenAI. Back to our Bloomberg colleagues.
So our view is there will be more consolidation, but I didn't anticipate this form of consolidation where you end up seeing a hostile bid, you know, where clearly I think given Microsoft's stake in OpenAI, there's no way you could see a deal like this happen.
Okay, so that's an important point here because Microsoft owns 49% of OpenAI. They're basically the controlling shareholder. They've not said anything about this at all in response to this unsolicited offer. Sam Altman did say, no, thank you, but we will buy Twitter for $9.74 billion if you want, so kind of trolling him back. If Microsoft were to say something, what would it say here?
Well, I think the relationship between Altman and Microsoft hasn't been very good either. Mm. And there have been concerns about OpenAI triggering an AGI clause, and that would potentially be an end to, you know, the profits that OpenAI has to give to Microsoft. So there are a lot of legal complications when it comes to the OpenAI-Microsoft relationship. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, Microsoft does have a 49% stake in the company. Even though they don't have a board seat, mm-hmm. they still will call the shot. So they haven't said anything on Twitter, but mm-hmm. I would be very surprised if they were even open to entertaining, you know.
And they're all in on OpenAI. I mean, this is it. Oh, this is their bet on AI.
Yeah.
What do you make of the investors that Elon Musk has gathered here to make this bid? Valor Equity Partners, Baron Capital, Atreides Management, Vi Capital, 8VC, R. Emanuel, Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale. This is a serious group of investors.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of these are investors in XAI. So mm-hmm. that's the common thread. Elon wants XAI to be the foundational model that, you know, everyone uses for AGI or deploying generative AI. So from that perspective, it makes sense that they really want to double down and kind of make that connection with OpenAI in some way. But I still don't see a way where, you know, this form of deal would go through.
And XAI, just to be clear, is a lot smaller than OpenAI as well. So we're talking about a minnow buying a shark.
Well, I mean, XAI did have their own private funding round and they raised $6 billion, I think, recently. So clearly, you know, with foundational models, the race is narrowing. Now you're talking about five or six foundational model companies, Anthropic, Meta, Gemini, XAI, OpenAI. So, and then the Chinese one. So clearly that race is narrowing, but you need a lot of capital to keep training your models. And if you're not going to see, you know, DeepSeek or that sort of moment where you have the adoption and the kind of the consumers using your product, then it becomes hard to sustain, you know, the billion-dollar investments when it comes to training these models.
Very quickly, is this good news or bad news for Meta?
Well, I think the good thing for Meta and Google is they own their own destiny when it comes to the CapEx and also their own applications where they deploy these.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context from the local and global environment. As always, thanks so much for joining us.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.